You're listening to Holder Tonight with Peter Anthony Holder on Montreal's News Talk Leader, CJAD 800.
Hour number three with me, Peter Anthony Holder, here on Montreal's News Talk Leader, CJAD 800. Still to come, a double heaping helping of stuff from the CJAD stuff file. Plus, if you're all good, you might even have a moment of Bradness coming your way here on CJD. But right now, let's talk a little bit about education. On the line with us is Risa Steindl Brown, who is the author of The Call to Brilliance, as we talk about the school systems both in the United States and here in Canada. Hi, Risa. How are you?
Hi. Good evening, Peter. How are you?
Fine. Thanks for being on the program with us this evening.
Well, it's my pleasure. Thank you, Peter.
Now, you have a problem, I understand, with conventional education techniques. You say it just doesn't work for all kids, correct?
Absolutely.
What is the biggest problem you have with the school systems as they stand right now?
Well, our children lose their passion. They lose their sense of excitement about the world. They lose their light. When they were 2 years old, they were busy exploring everything, and everything was wonderful and new to them. And by the time we've processed them through school, many of them, if not most of them, have lost that sense of exuberance and joy, and the sense that the universe is there for their exploration and they have a vital part in it.
Is there a turning point in your estimation as to when this takes place, or is it right out of the gate in kindergarten?
You know, it varies. And the problem is that often it happens so slowly that you turn around, and I get calls from parents all the time. You know, he was fine last year. I don't know what happened this year. Some people report it right off in kindergarten. Some kindergarten children are bored and restless, and it's not meeting their needs at all, and that's a really bad way to start.
Now, I grew up in the baby boomer age, so when I was growing up, there were a lot of kids in school. And I'm guessing that part of the problem at the time would have been numbers. Is that an issue today still?
Well, numbers is always an issue. I mean, you think about it, and you think about one mother and 25-year-olds. You know, nature would never be that cruel. it isn't. Our numbers are outrageous, and we could have we could have a much better ratio of student to teacher if we used more help in the classroom, like our retired and elderly would love to help. And would volunteer their time, and we could give more children individualized attention. Numbers are definitely an issue. But there are greater issues than that.
The book you've written is called The Call to Brilliance. And by the way, people can take a look at the website, www.thecalltobrilliance.com. That's www.thecalltobrilliance.com. Was there any time or any moment where you saw something where push came to shove? In other words, why did you write the book?
Oh, well, it was really easy. I've been an educator for over 36 years, and I was an educator for quite some time before I had my own kids, and I thought, well, that would give me a really good understanding of what was going on. But the fact of the matter is, there's nothing like being a mother. And I looked at my 5-year-old, and he was very talkative, very energetic. He moved around a lot. He was not ready to read, and he had 1,000 questions about everything. And our local kindergarten had one teacher and 33 kids, and they weren't allowed to talk. They weren't allowed to move. She didn't want to have their questions. She didn't want to have their answers. And I knew that that was going to be a bad match for my son, because he would be, even though he was sweet and wonderful, he would be chastised. He'd be put down. He would have a bad self-concept, and it would be a terrible way to start his career in life.
Okay. Now, just what you've described, he didn't want to ask questions, or he wasn't allowed to ask questions or get his questions answered. You mentioned there are 33 kids in the classroom. What would the alternative be under those circumstances? I mean, you can't have 33 kids all asking questions.
No, but you could narrow the ratio of adult to child in that room. I mean, there could have been parent volunteers. There could have been paid aides. There could have been people who broke it up into little groups. There could have been all kinds of alternatives. But the basic structure was geared to taking an information and answering questions on a test and not exploring. And if they set up an environment closer to a Montessori environment where there were little centers where children went to different spots, where they could have choices, those issues would disappear.
Okay, you mentioned that the educational system as it stands right now kind of zaps the zest out of the kids.
Yes.
Early. You were an educator for a long period of time.
Yes.
Does the educational system also zap the zest out of the teachers?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I started a little over 36 years ago, and I see 36 years ago, it was a different ballgame. Teachers were allowed to be more innovative. They were allowed to be more creative. What our school systems have become is a content delivery system. So now the teacher, it's all governed by the textbook. So now the teacher delivers what's on the agenda from the textbook. And it's lost its spark. The teacher no longer has time. It's not on the agenda for the teacher to share their passion with the child, with the children in their room. And so the demands of the system today take away the creativity from the teacher. And when you take away creativity from anyone, child or teacher, they lose that life spark and that passion for brilliance.
Isn't part of the problem the fact that schools and school boards and state boards, in your case, are looking to get kids through the school system with a certain level of education, or at least certain numbers, because funding is tied to that?
Oh, you mean pushing them through for their ADA?
Exactly.
Absolutely. I'll probably be fired tomorrow, right? But absolutely. That's vital. And, they get money for children every day, and if they're not pushed through, then yes, they lose a lot of money. In California, they lose almost $600 a month per child.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't put a lot of incentive on educating the kids, but just they're cash cows.
Right. Right. It's everything.
Okay. So what types of things, we're going to take a quick break, but I want to get back and talk about what types of things you advocate in your book and how schools can change. We'll do that in a moment. We're talking with Risa Steindl-Brown, who is the author of The Call to Brilliance. You can check the website, www.thecalltobrilliance.com. That's www.thecalltobrilliance.com. This is Montreal's News Talk Leader, CJAD 800.
You're listening to Holder Tonight with Peter Anthony Holder on Montreal's News Talk Leader, CJAD 800.
And we are talking with Risa Steindl-Brown, who is the author of The Call to Brilliance, as we talk about the educational system in the United States and also here in Canada. And what is it you're advocating in your book?
Well, Peter, our educational system is over 150 years old. It was designed to put the children of the 19th century into the Industrial Revolution. As you can see, a lot has changed since then. It was designed to process children to perform a task, and melt the melting pot a little bit, and that was about the extent of it. We needed change. My experience has been that instead of just processing children, if from the time they're little, we look for each child's talents, his interests, his skills, what he loves to do, and we help him find and develop those things, then he develops, by the time he's 18, you know, the passion that leads to brilliance, and he's been working on what he loves or she loves all along throughout her educational career.
Wow, where were you when I needed a guidance counselor in grade 8?
I wish I had me too.
Wow.
So I've been working with this model now for over 20 years, and it's been extraordinarily successful, and it's been successful with kids who supposedly have learning disabilities like ADHD and dyslexia and and developmental delays. It works with normal kids, regular kids, kids with every kind of label, including gifted. And it just doesn't seem to matter. If we search for their talent and what they love to do, we'll find them. And then we have happy, whole, energetic, excited, exuberant children who wake up in the morning and can't wait to go to school, can't wait to start their day.
Now, let me play devil's advocate for a second here. What about people who say that there are certain needs that a society has? I remember when I was going to school, you know, the guidance counselors would come in and certain groups would come in and they'd say, well, and I went to school in the 70s. So they were saying, you know, in the next, when you graduate from school, we'll be needing computer programmers. That's what you should be doing. Never thinking whether the person was interested in doing that or not. That's what society would need.
Right. The same thing happened to me, by the way, when I was trying to go to graduate school. And here's the thing. If you are living your passion and doing the thing that you're supposed to be doing, the thing you were born to be doing, the seed that you had inside you when you were little that developed into something wonderful, then you become a productive member of our society. Hmm. And no, people don't have the same talent. So just by the odds, people will be doing different things, and our society's needs will be fulfilled. But they'll be fulfilled better than they are now because we'll have a world of people who are happy and content. They love what they're doing. There'll be no midlife crisis. And we'll create a different, more compassionate world.
Okay. I've always known what I wanted to do for a living since I was 9 years old. Conversely, I know people who had no clue by the time they got to college. So how do you deal with those people?
Right. Well, I contend that if they went through a system where from the time they were little, people helped them find what it is they did love to do, they wouldn't be clueless at 18. That was my whole point. Let me tell you a little story. Okay, I have three children. They're all in their 20s now. My boys were very late readers. They didn't really read until they were 9 and 10. And it isn't that we said, well, just check in when you're ready. I mean, we tried. But neurologically, they just weren't ready. But we nurtured their love of the things they love to do and their talents. And they ended up in college at 11 and 12 in electronics and computer sciences. And they weren't in college because they were pushed. They were in college because that's where they wanted to be, because that's where the next level of information was to feed them. Our daughter read everything and anything at 4.5 and was in college at age 12 as well. And all three children and the school that I created spent half a day every day playing in an orchard. And one by one, all these different children started to manifest their brilliance. The boys were... One of my sons was a systems analyst,
mm-hmm.
At Warner Brothers at age 14, and the other one started an online sports magazine at 15 out of the living room with three adult partners, and at the end of the year they had an industrial building with 6 or 7 full-time employees and 65 sales reps and coaches across the United States and Canada, okay? The book is full of story after story of children who were allowed to find the thing they loved, and by the time they were 18, they were well on their path to doing the thing they loved to do.
Okay, now, your kids were lucky enough to have the benefit of someone who was an educator who could recognize what they were going through at the time. But what about the other parent out there who's thinking, oh my God, my kid's 9 and he can't read, or or he doesn't read enough, or he doesn't know what he wants, you know what I mean?
Right, happens all the time.
Okay, so you had the foresight to know what's going on. You're an educator, you could see the signs, but a lot of parents don't. So what do teachers who are listening to us right now, what do educators listening to this right now tell those parents rather than getting them worried? Because I think the knee-jerk reaction is to panic under those situations.
Right. Well, it's a real bind, okay? Because I know at least here in the States, they're held to the content standards where at a certain age they're supposed to be doing a certain thing.
Mm-hmm.
And if not, again, they lose money, they lose their rating, they lose all kinds of things. And it's really not about the child. We really need to restructure. And if we restructured, and so it was more of a Montessori type program where children learned basic skills when, from the time they were little, they learned at their own rate, their reading skills, their math skills, their writing skills, then when it clicked, there isn't anything they can't do. Then everything all of a sudden happens at once. It's like an epiphany. So the teachers are stuck with the system, and the parents are stuck with the system. For the teachers, if there was any way inside their day where they could make room for, or inside their curriculum, for a child to explore on his own, to go off in different avenues of the subject or whatever it is that they're doing. In elementary school, if there was project time and passion time in the afternoon, or in middle school and high school, it's a little more challenging because it's subject-oriented. But if it was more exploratory, you would have more kids finding what they love to do. For parents, the best thing you can do is try to etch out time for them to find the thing they love to do. And that's really difficult with homework and sports, but that's necessary.
How do you feel about homework?
Do you, you really want to know?
Yeah.
I mean, are we talking about college? I mean, my daughter's in a PhD program in math. That's all she does,
mm-hmm.
right? Are we talking about elementary school?
Elementary and high school. Yeah.
High school. Hey, here's the thing. We give our children often meaningless homework. It's task-oriented. It doesn't benefit them a whole lot. And it takes away from family time, so it tends to break up the family. I can't tell you how many phone calls I get in my office over the great homework battle at night,
mm-hmm.
right? I think there should be a better way of doing this. It takes away time for a child to find his passion. It's just even time for a child to just sit and contemplate who he is and what he's doing and why he's here and what the world's about. We need to give our children more time to do that.
You know, the thing I've never understood, I have nephews that spend a lot of time with me, and they spend a lot of time at my house. And the thing, and they're 10 and 14 now, and the thing I've never understood is they're given homework over the holidays.
Right.
And it's like, no.
Right. Well, you think about it. If an employer, you work for an employer and you're supposed to work from 9 to 5 or whatever the time is, and then the employer says, oh, by the way, here's 5 more hours for you to take home every night, and here's a pile of work that it has to be due Monday morning, it would be illegal.
Yeah.
So I think we really need to rethink that. And if we're not getting it done in school time, aside from the occasional need or when it is really necessary, we need to think about how we're spending that school time. Let me tell you, as a classroom teacher, particularly if you talk about high school, and if you're on the hour system, some high schools are on a block system where the subject may be 2.5 hours or 3 hours long, but if you're on an hour system, it's not an hour. It's 5 minutes to get the class settled and 5 minutes at the end to collect paperwork and 7 minute passing period, and all of a sudden you've lost 17 minutes, and then there's some explanation time, and pretty soon, if you look at the actual structure of that classroom, there's not a whole lot of time to get anything done.
Hmm.
And I think we can rework that as well.
Isn't it also we try to put things into students' heads to remember certain things, but really not focusing on what's important? You know, we all learned in 1492 Columbus sailed the ocean blue. But my question is, why did he leave Spain?
Right.
Isn't that the question we should be asking?
Right.
Why did he leave Spain?
And you know, we should be asking, what questions should we be asking?
Yeah.
That's we should be able to question the question. We should be able to ask, well, when you look at history, what are the questions that we should ask? Not just the question in the textbook and the answer in the teacher's edition.
Hmm. How does someone get their hands on the book? The book, again, is called The Call to Brilliance, and the website is www.thecalltobrilliance.com.
It's available at Amazon.com.
Okay, so people can get it online there.
Mm-hmm.
Can they also get it on the website as well?
Yes, you can. The website will tell you how to do that.
Okay. Have you talked to school boards to try and change the ways? Is this like trying to turn around the Queen Mary?
More like the Titanic. But, you know, if you don't hit that iceberg straight on, you might just have a little chance if you just veer a little. I was asked, the program that I started that my kids were in was a philanthropic program. It was actually inside a plumbing factory for the parents, for the children of the factory. But 3.5 years ago, I was asked to do this for a local public school, and we are doing it. And slowly but surely, we have an extraordinarily supportive superintendent and assistant superintendent. And there's a lot to buck because there's people have certain set ideas, and are, some people are very rigid about changing them. But we're working on it here. The program I've been running is extraordinarily successful. We have 61 kids, but we're about to expand. We have a combination of homeschooling and classes, and we're about to include alternative full-time classes as well.
Who did you write the book for, parents or teachers?
You know, I actually wrote it for parents. When I started writing it, I didn't know why I was writing it. I started writing it as it was happening. And, you know, I didn't know if it was going to have an ending. It was really kind of a memoir. It was my own little journal of what was going on because I could see that my kids didn't fit. And I didn't have an answer, but I hoped as time went on that if we found an answer, maybe it would help other parents. As it turns out, as the book is being released, we get an extraordinary amount of calls from teachers as well. So I was very pleased, it seems, to rekindle a lot of the passion that teachers felt, you know, they lost or was no longer possible. So both.
The book is called The Call to Brilliance. It is written by Risa Steindl-Brown. You can find out more information by going to the website, www.thecalltobrilliance.com. That's www.thecalltobrilliance.com. You can find the book at places like Amazon.com. I thank you very much, Risa, for taking the time to be on the program with us this evening.
Oh, thank you, Peter. It was absolutely my pleasure anytime.
News is next here on Montreal's News Talk Leader CJD 800. On the other side, a double heaping helping of stuff from the CJD stuff file.